You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, this is Greg Buttle, and you're listening to the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN. That's right. It used to be the Buttle Show, but now it's the K. Show.
Thank you, Greg, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Thursday. Yes, it's Thursday already. It's March 4th. It's 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're all together for the next 4 hours. The other 20, well, those are your responsibility. Do with it what you may. Do with it in a productive way, what you want. But we can only take you for 4 hours after that. I don't know if you want to go the Carlin route or whatever the case may be. He's not even on today. Because no. We have a Knick game and we have a Ranger game. But we're ready to roll. We're ready to do it. We're here. We're happening. It's now. Don, are you smelling spring in the air? Or are you smelling it?
Yeah, today I got to take the ride into the city, which I don't get to do that often anymore.
Did you have a fob with you?
Yeah, that was the
good
first thing
yeah.
that I grabbed before I left the house because I did not want to make the trip back. But beautiful. It is a lovely day. And as you said, we got Knicks on our air. We've got Rangers and Devils on 1050. I'll have the call with
you. Yeah.
That's why I made the trip into the city today.
Beautiful.
Nice. That is great. So we're all set. We are ready to roll. We're going to start off with Jimbalaya Harden. Another triple-double. 8 for the Nets this year. He had 4 all last year with the Rockets. He returns to Houston. When he was introduced before the game, there were way more boos than there were cheers. There was only 3,000 people in the stand, so it's not like it could be overwhelming. The beginning of the game, whenever he touched the ball, the crowd booed or jeered, not cheered. But then the Rockets showed a tribute video. You know, one of those vignettes that they put on the scoreboard, all the great moments, and then the crowd cheered. And Harden liked it and thanked everybody and put his hands together and then his hands to his heart. So obviously he felt good about it. And then the Nets went on and beat the Rockets' brains in. But listen, I'm not going to gauge boos or cheers or whatever. I think they did the right thing, the fans, by booing him the way he left. I have not talked about this with Don and Peter before the show. It is, to me, incomprehensible that someone would put together a tribute video on a guy who not more than 2 months ago did everything that you could possibly do wrong to get out of a place of work. Now, down the line, sure. Next year, sure. I mean, the wound is not as deep. It's not as fresh. The cut's not as bloody. Why would you put together a tribute video? Thank you, sir. May I have another? The Rockets deserve everything they get. I am not surprised now that James Harden went out of there. What a clown show. We're going to put together a tribute video. That's like your wife that you've been married to for 10 years cheats on you, and you get her a Valentine's Day card. Are you out of your mind?
Always the same analogy. It's scary, isn't it, Peter?
He goes back to that well quite a bit.
But you guys know what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, the ending was ugly, and then you're going to make nice to the guy? Unless Tillman Fertitta, the owner of the Rockets, did something that we have no idea what he did. And that's the thing that angered Harden to the point that Harden said, I got to get out of here by any means possible. But if Tillman Fertitta, his hands are clean, and he puts up a tribute video, you're a nozzle. You're a complete nozzle for doing that.
Can I play devil's advocate?
Sure.
Because fundamentally, I agree with you. That's usually the way that it goes. When you get treated that way, you know, the thank you, sir, may I have another is like the perfect phrase for something like that. But maybe Fertitta's playing the long game. And he figures, listen, we don't know how things are going to change. Look how things change for Alex Rodriguez. He sued his own team, and he gets honored by the team a few years later. Like, things can change. And so he's thinking, listen, I don't want to play the bad guy like most owners do. You know what? Yeah, he left, but I want to play the long game. I want to make nice with him because maybe one day he might come back or one day be a part of the organization, and I don't want to have it go down and have that uncomfortableness that you had between Cleveland and LeBron James. And as far as the tribute video is concerned, if he is indeed playing the long game, that's the perfect time to do it when there's only 3,000 fans in the stands, rather than do it when there's 20,000 fans in the stands, and then the reaction might be a lot different. So clearly he wants to play the good guy in this. Clearly he's trying to pave the way for some sort of a reunited situation with James Harden, whether it's as a player or somewhere down the road within management. So he's willing to play that role because he must think down the road he wants to have a relationship with Jim. And if that's the case, then this is the perfect way to play it.
Yeah, but again, you could do it next year and start the healing then. Listen, did it stop LeBron from going back to Cleveland when Gilbert, I mean, what Gilbert said about LeBron was awful, and LeBron didn't do anything wrong but just leave. So I don't get it.
Well,
I don't understand. And he deserves everything that he gets for Tita. If you're gonna be in a prone position like that for a player who did that to you, then you're a nozzle.
But I know. All right, that's obviously an opinion. It's a strong opinion. All right, he's willing to play the role of nozzle if it puts him in a better situation down the road.
But do you think it does? I mean, if played the tribute video when the wound is less fresh,
but
did the Islanders play a tribute video for John Tavares?
Because they didn't. Because I think their fans would have had a riot. But clearly the fans in Houston, based on the reception, do not look at Harden the way the Islanders fans look at Tavares. They seemed kind of mixed. There were actually a few cheers, which surprised me. So the fan base doesn't feel that way. Fertitta knows it, knows that not only could he get Harden maybe back here one day, pave the way, but maybe players look at it and go, wow, look at how Houston took the high road. I'd like to go play there. Like, it makes you feel good to play the victim. It makes you feel good to get your pound of flesh from him and to go back at him and not play the tribute video and all that. But down the road, after that satisfaction of feeling good for a couple of minutes, does it really do you a service dealing with players, dealing with Harden possibly in the future? So maybe he's willing to play the role of the buffoon for 5 minutes, but for the long play, he might think it actually benefits him.
I'm a little confused by Michael's take. Just in the sense that, I guess I feel like you're using the wrong word. Nozzle is not the right word. He's not
being...
Well,
there's a Yiddish word that I'd use, but I think it might get dumped. It starts with an S. Ends with a K.
That wouldn't get dumped, I don't think. It shouldn't.
No, but I'm not going to try, but that's what he's at. That's what he is. For doing that, he's that.
Well, it's... Yeah, but he's not being a bad guy. You're
no,
implying
he's being
a
stooge. He's being a stooge.
But
he's being a supplicant to what Harden did to him.
All right, I agree. But his fan base seems somewhat mixed. He clearly wants to take the high road by offering to retire his number. I mean, he doesn't obviously feel the way you feel. And why alienate the player or players by having your couple of minutes of just feeling good? I understand he kind of looks like a doormat.
That's
but maybe by acting like a doormat now, a few years from now, players go, hey, I like the way he handled that. He understands it. He gets us. I'd like to go play for that guy.
I just don't think it's going to have that effect. And, I mean, if they had done nothing, it would not have been, you know, if he kept his mouth shut, he'd already said about the retired number. Boy, so he reached out right there. A tribute video on top of the embarrassment of what Harden did. I mean, Harden came in out of shape. Harden did everything that you don't want a person to do. He has even admitted that he's done that.
Right.
And then you give him a tribute video. That's okay. You can continue to throw excrement on me. That's okay. I'm fine. Good.
But we had a whole conversation yesterday about how players support players and how a lot of players don't necessarily hate Jim Harden for what he did. So if you know as an owner that that's kind of the feel, where you got people like Jay Williams saying, I'd be surprised, I wouldn't boo him if I were a fan of the Houston Rockets. You've got a whole village of players who kind of feel the way Harden feels. Those are all potential free agents. Those are all potential players that could play for you with the Houston Rockets. So you looking like a buffoon for a couple of minutes in front of a small segment of people. For the long play, you might actually put yourself in pretty good standing with the community of people you're trying to win over to play for your team.
Somebody just told me that the Islanders did play a video and Tavares was booed during it.
I don't remember if they played a video. Maybe because that's kind of the gold standard of what you do when somebody returns. And obviously, the fan, I don't know why they did that. I don't remember. When you have a whole, when you have people burning his jerseys outside, why they'd want the tribute video. But I'm sure the Islanders thought the same thing. Hey, we're trying to win players to come over here. We don't want to play the bad guy. How does it help an owner to build up a wall between players and themselves when you know in this league a lot of players feel the same way that Harden does? That when they don't want in a situation, they're going to get out of it. So you're kind of dealing with this is how life is supposed to be. So you can fight it, or you could just say, hey, this is the price of doing business. One day I'm going to try to maybe bring Harden back here. Maybe one day a player that did a similar thing to another franchise is going to be a free agent, and I don't want him to alienate me because I supported the owners in this. Clearly, this is a long play. And I think he's got a chance, Michael, as much as he probably feels like a jerk now, of benefiting from this.
Well, I hope so. I mean, to make yourself look like a complete doormat and, you know, there's a chance you might benefit. I mean, when Harden's done with the Nets, he's going to be 35 years old, going to be 36 years old. Well, what are you going to have, a retirement tour for him? You're going to have an old player come back just to get the Hosannas for one more day, one more game? You've got to have some sort of pride in life, don't you?
But you're acting. Do you think the majority of people feel the way you do, as strongly as you do?
I have no idea.
First of all, it doesn't matter what anybody outside of Houston feels as far as he's concerned. His fan base had a lukewarm reception. So he might be speaking to his fans. So if he acts like you, maybe he alienates some of his own fans who actually support Harden.
But I'm not asking him to act like me. The tribute video is insulting. Don't you think that Harden probably had a laugh about it? Look at the way I got out of town, and they're still lionizing me? And I know his 8 years there were stupendous basketball, but a lot of the way he left, at least right now, should erase that. You can't have that kind of ending. And think about it. How many people in the NBA leave the way Harden did? All the people that we used to complain about them forming super teams. Well, at least they became free agents and they had the right to do it.
Right.
I mean, the closest thing is Anthony Davis.
He didn't
say, I want to be out of here. He said, I'm not signing at the end of this contract. And he did play.
But you've said it yourself that this is probably the future of the NBA, if not sports. Right?
Well, what they did yesterday only makes it's the norm now.
Maybe that's it. Maybe just like, listen, why should I be the guy to try to stop it when clearly this is the route that it's going? So either I accept it or I go after the guy. And if I go after the guy and it ends up becoming where the players dictate where you go,
now
then you're
going to
end up being the loser.
I don't think Fertitta's that smart in terms of the long game. I just don't. I think he just made it okay to be a doormat, to be treated that way, to break a contract, and to not play hard. I was watching some people yesterday on TV where they said that when he did play for Houston this year, he was not even trying on the court, throwing the ball away. He wasn't even trying. He did everything that you would actually suspend a player for. So not only does he get to go where he got to go, and the Rockets got a good return, but where are the Rockets right now? Yesterday was their 13th straight loss. This guy destroyed a franchise for the near future. Destroyed it. They would have been a contender with John Wall and James Harden. They would have been in the playoffs in the Western Conference. Sorry, they would have. And now they're a laughingstock. And on top of that, you're going to thank the guy for the 8 years he gave you and also the way he left. Okay, listen, I know I'm probably an idealist. I get it. I'm probably out of touch. I get that too. But to me, right is right and wrong is wrong. And I'll repeat, I'm thrilled that Harden got his way. We get a chance to watch his brilliance.
Right. Now,
that's awful the way he got his way.
But I'm looking at Twitter, Michael, and people are showing the video of from the game in which Tavares got the tribute video. If Tavares got a tribute video, when that ownership, Ledecky and Malkin, knew how the fan base felt about it, then every owner's under an obligation to give a tribute video.
But you know what? Tavares left. He left as a free agent. He didn't break a contract.
I know, but I think it's just something everybody does. It gets done. It gets done. And then Danny sends a tweet that says, I'm a Texans fan, sadly, from New York, but listen to a lot of Houston radio. The mentality there is they're upset about how he left, but thankful for what he did while he was there. So overall, respect him. So if that's the case, then you're playing to your fan base. The fan base feels the way Fertitta does. So don't you then have to do it?
And the young fan base in particular, Don, is going to feel affection towards Harden regardless of the end because he brought them more joy than any other player they've ever seen. No?
Yeah, I understand how Michael feels. I probably would feel the same way if I were a fan of the team. But you've got to read the tea leaves as an owner. If your fan base is okay with it and you understand where the culture of the sport is going, then, yeah, you'd feel good for 30 seconds sticking it to him, not giving him the video. But in the long play, you probably end up hurting your franchise,
right,
alienating your fan base, and putting yourself in a much worse situation. So he probably wasn't happy about it, but I think he ended up doing the right thing.
We'll see. Time will tell.
But time will tell what? What's the negative of doing this?
I still don't think people are going to go there and play because there was some nefarious backroom stuff that Harden didn't like about Fertitta, then everybody in the league knows anyway.
Well, but then that's a different story. But I don't know how being a doormat for what will be forgotten about in a day long term is going to hurt him.
But don't you have to have some kind of pride in your own self? I mean, really, think about it.
Sometimes the pride comes from doing what you think is best for your team, not what's best for you personally. He's got a team. He's got a fan base. He's got players on that team. A lot of them may actually support Harden. He plays in a league that seems to not necessarily have a problem with what Harden did the way you feel that way. So personally, he's probably red hot. Personally, he probably would love to stick it to him. But professionally and for the responsibility of ownership, you've got to look to your fans and give them what they want.
Well, listen to this. Listen to this, Don. Of the seven deadly sins, philosophers reserve a special place for pride. Lust, envy, anger, greed, gluttony, and sloth are all bad, the sages say. But pride is the deadliest of all, the root of all evil, and the beginning of sin. Not surprising a bad guy like Michael Kay is insisting that someone didn't have enough. It's what would the pride here have been any win?
Did you pronounce my first name the right way? Give that one more shot.
Mikhail?
No, just Michael instead of Michael.
I don't even know what you're referring to. I'm offended.
Anthony will remind you in a little bit.
But I just don't understand what you basing these feelings sort of on anger and bitterness. I don't see the real win.
Listen.
To impress you?
If he doesn't impress me. He doesn't even know I exist.
Of course he does.
My point is this. You don't have to do a tribute video. You don't have to do anything. You've already said you're going to retire his number like a complete doofus, okay? You've done that. You've reached out. Boy, that's some olive branch. The complete opposite of putting up a tribute video is to put up a video of all the highlights of James when he was fat and just bagging the game on the court. For the games that he played for the Rockets, that would be a terrible thing to do. I mean, it would be the part of me that I would want to do it, but
I would not do that.
But if he doesn't play a tribute video yesterday, he doesn't look bad because he's already said he's going to retire the guy's number. He doesn't look bad. Now he looks like a doormat by playing a tribute video for a guy who did everything but take the legs out of the franchise. They've lost 13 in a row. They're going to be bad for many years to come because of one man. Who they did everything for. Everything. You want Chris Paul? Here he is. You want him gone? He's gone. You want Westbrook? Here he is. You don't like him? Okay, we'll trade him. You don't want Jeff Van Gundy? Okay, we'll bring in Silas. They did everything for him. And it still wasn't enough, and he still got out in a really, really awful way. Awful. I can't believe you guys are defending
him. Well, but no, because I'm just, I understand from an emotional standpoint, but from a strategic standpoint, that 30 seconds of pleasure you get from sticking it to him, how does it help you long term? That you're the guy that was anti-player. You heard your fan base have a lukewarm reception to him that actually became a little bit better as the night went on.
No, it became better after the tribute video. The lukewarm reception should tell you, it was more than lukewarm, they booed. He should have said, you know what, let's bag the tribute video. This crowd doesn't like him right now.
But it wasn't that.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't like.
It wasn't deafening.
It wasn't like when LeBron came back to Cleveland. And that crowd had no right to do that for a guy who left in the right way. Now, remember when Peter the other day, Don says the best broadcaster of all time?
Yes.
Let's listen to this.
Oh.
Come on, okay.
Sounds like you're drunk. And here's me imitating you.
Come on, okay.
Well,
okay. I work a lot. Apparently my voice gave out momentarily.
No. That was like you were slurring. That had nothing to do with your voice box.
Let me hear that again.
Yeah, you can hear. You're gonna hear it a lot.
It Buck is. Okay. It's worrisome.
This is uncomfortable.
Buck okay. Yeah, Buck Don, okay. Did you hear it at the time?
No.
It's gonna work. Okay. Troubling. You know what? I don't have the authority. Why don't you take the rest of the show off? Because this is not good.
I stand by my point. I don't understand why the Fertittas owe you anything and people who feel that way. Because if they decided the fan base isn't that against him, our young fans idolize him. They're always going to idolize him because he was here for 9 fruitful years. What do we win by really being petty? Let's go the other route. I've never seen someone shame people for sort of taking the high road.
It's funny, though. I always have heard that throughout my career. You know, you should take the high road. And I go, yeah, the high road is the road less traveled. Now, most people take the low road.
But that's
why the high road is actually like...
It's empty.
No, it's not empty. It's always like lionized when it happens because people aren't on that high road. People take the low road.
I mean, granted, the timeline's a little different, but the Yankees forgave A-Rod. A-Rod sued the Yankees. And yet they still honored him.
Well, he was still on the team.
Well, exactly, but even beyond that, Michael, they forgave him. He works for the team now.
No, he doesn't. Not anymore.
Well, he did after he was retired.
Right.
They forgave him, despite the fact that he sued them and embarrassed them.
They didn't forgive him the day after he sued them.
But I said that.
I said if you could forgive Harden in years in the future, this close to what he did, you look like a moron.
I bet you that if A-Rod tried to extend his career and play with the Twins and came back to Yankee Stadium, they'd give him a video.
I guarantee you, not if it was a month after he sued them. No way. No way.
I don't know.
After he sued them, Don, it was 2 years later that they gave him that during the thunderstorm at Yankee Stadium. It was 4 minutes where they handed him a plaque or whatever, and then his daughters came out, and then the sky opened up. It was very, very telling. Let's put it like that. not that the Yankees controlled the weather, but it was well after what he did. The fact that it's so close to he completely dogged his way out of town. That's not good.
But when A-Rod was going through all the things he was going through, we never dreamed. We had conversations on the air. They'll never honor him at Yankee Stadium. He's going to be a pariah for the rest of his life with the organization, and they forgave. So if you know you're going to forgive, then why not just do it right away?
I don't understand. Michael's argument is like there's no upside to it except like pride and anger.
Right, which would help him personally.
No, it wouldn't. No, and by the way, he thinks it would. It wouldn't even help him.
No, but for that couple of minutes, you know, Fertitta would feel good that he stuck at the Harden, but for long term, he would do damage to his franchise and himself.
You guys are taking this wrong. I'm not saying stick it to him. I'm not saying playing a blooper reel of what the guy did. Don't do anything. Why are you celebrating a guy who dogged his way out of town and ruined your franchise? They lost 13 in a row after yesterday's game. 13 straight. You know how hard that is in the NBA, where there are a lot of bad teams, to lose 13 straight? And, oh, let's celebrate the guy who did it to us. Come on.
Again, though, you can keep saying that because it's how you feel, but there's still not a downside.
There really isn't a downside.
You look like a schmo. That's the downside.
To you. You
look like a schmo.
But again, I'm getting tweets from people in Houston. They don't think of it that way in Houston. Maybe New Yorkers are built a little different. I don't know. They don't seem to be as vindictive. The fan base doesn't seem to have that kind of vitriol towards him. They're upset and disappointed. That's why they booed him.
Maybe they have Stockholm syndrome because everybody in Houston leaves them. Everybody. Well, every great player they've had has left them.
For whatever the reason, the idea is you got to play to your base. And if the base doesn't hate him, why should you?
I can have my own opinion. I don't hate the guy.
You're calling the guy a buffoon. You could disagree. Clearly you disagree. But I don't know how this hurts him strategy-wise. How this hurts him long-term for his
franchise.
Only time
will tell. I think it makes him look like a complete inept buffoon. Well, that's what I think.
Well, you got people like Jay Williams who thought, and this is somebody who has a national radio show, this is somebody that played basketball, actually had the opinion he thought the people of Houston should cheer Harden last night. So you have a large segment of the NBA population that actually does not have that big a problem with what Harden did. He's in that community trying to win those players to play for him. This is the smart move.
It doesn't surprise me that NBA players feel like that because that's their exit strategy now, too. He just laid out the blueprint for them.
So
and there's no downside because the owner of the team's not going to rip you. He's going to retire your number and play you a tribute video after you destroyed his team.
Right. But if you get vindictive and you do things that end up alienating those players, then maybe you have a difficult time getting those players to play for you. But
time
for a couple
tell.
Of minutes, a talk show host 1,500 miles away thinks he's a buffoon. That's really the only negative of what he did. I don't think people in Houston are looking at him as a doormat.
Most of the people in Houston probably agree. Do you think the people that booed Harden during introductions thought he should have received a video? So let's say of the 3,000 people, 2,100 were booing. You think it's smart to alienate 67% of your audience? Is that smart too?
I don't know how much of a problem they had with it. I don't know.
Yeah, well, they booed the player. If you booed the player, you don't want to see a tribute video, I would think. Maybe I'm wrong.
With a crowd that small, can you really even base anything off of it?
Can't base anything off of it. You know what? I'll stop talking. We can't base anything. I'm wrong. You guys are right.
Well, sorry for combating with you for conversation on radio, all right?
We should. You know what, Michael? You're right. You're right.
Great opinion.
We're wrong.
I'm going to break right now because I'm annoyed. I'm making perfect points. They're not listening to me.
I'm willing to make a prediction right now that our callers today will disagree with you at an 80% rate. I don't think anyone's going to agree with you today.
Good. Don't say we don't listen. Care. We're listening to everything that you're saying.
I don't care if they agree with me. That's my take. I don't give takes where I think the majority of people are going to like it.
Yeah, but
I
you're basing this take on how you feel the majority of a fan base would feel.
No, I believe
you're wrong.
No, that was one of my points. I'm basing this take on me. I wouldn't want to be treated poorly and then tell the person what a great person they are in any walk of life. I wouldn't do it. I'm basing it on me. These are my personal opinions. Not the opinions of ESPN, certainly it seems. Not the opinions of Don and Peter. These are Michael Kay's opinions.
Michael Kay.
All right, we'll towel off. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, you know our morning show, Rick DiPietro, Chris Canty, and the other guy that's on the show, that's on from 5 to 8 every Monday through Friday, 5 in the morning till 8 in the morning. But today there was big news.
Yes.
We, as a show, would like to send out our congratulations and love. Chris Canty got engaged today.
There you go.
How about that?
Congrats.
Congratulations, Chris. That's so cool. And only health and happiness for you both moving forward. That's really, really nice.
I felt so good for him because I reached out. I texted him, congratulations, because I said, congratulations on your engagement. She's a lucky lady. You will be a great husband. And I thought this was great. He says, thanks, Don. I really appreciate it. I feel like I'm the lucky one. I can't stop smiling. How cool is that?
He's a really good guy. There's on that show, there are two really good guys.
No, all three are tremendous human beings.
Well, that's your opinion. That's not mine.
You have zero evidence that Dave's a bad guy. Zero.
There's so much evidence. Stop it. Throwing a treadmill out the window, a remote control, leaving your family because the Giants lost.
No, he's not.
Those are bad guy moves.
It's not a bad guy move. It's a guy that needs help. So
right.
Everybody that needs help, you just throw away with the bathwater?
That's not what I'm saying. I think that there is an inherent flaw in his DNA.
Oh, there's no question about that, but it doesn't make him a bad guy.
We're all flawed, Michael.
What was that?
We're all flawed.
You now, the flip. You're right.
Michael K. Now, on the flip side, Don, imagine, you know, what Chris would have said if he didn't say what he said to you. If he had said, "You're damn right she is." I mean, that's.
Well, she's a lucky girl. He's a lucky guy. She's a lucky girl. He's a tremendous catch.
I thought.
He's a handsome guy. He's loaded. Former Super Bowl champion.
It's about money.
He's a catch.
Now, I want to congratulate her family.
What does that mean?
Because everyone wants to know that their child is marrying into a situation where they'll be well taken care of. Whether they have their own great career or not, Chris is a that's cha-ching. Good score. The family doesn't have to worry.
I just like the part where he says he couldn't stop smiling. That made me good. Feel
that
good.
Is very nice to you. He's a wonderful guy. So
bottom of the seventh inning in Port St. Lucie, Mets lead the Nationals 5-4. They played eight innings in Clearwater, and the Phillies beat the Yankees 15-0.
Oh!
Don. Yeah, 15-0.
That's not what you want.
That's a broadcast that could really have been helped out by a little Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg flavor there.
Well, fortunately, it wasn't on Yes, but I certainly hear what you're talking about.
I would have, Don, we could have flourished there. To tell some stories. I mean, you have room there to open things up and chat a little bit.
I haven't even brought this up to you guys because I don't want to get hopes up. But after the unfortunate appearance by Flip on the show where Don went out of his mind.
Let me think about it.
I have been talking with Flip at length, and I think there is a little bit of a thawing. And I'm hoping that I could get him to change his mind. But the sticking point is the way Don acted, because Don acted very rudely.
I guess I should offer this piece, too. A couple of days ago, I didn't mention this to you guys, I had a conversation with Flip.
Really?
He called me accidentally because his accountant has the same first name as me. Before anyone makes any
same
jokes
first
out
or
there.
Last name?
First name?
See, before anyone makes any jokes, first name, Peter, not Rosenberg.
Okay.
Though both would make sense. So he called me by accident and asked if the transfer had hit yet. And I thought he was joking and didn't understand what he was talking about. And then he realized it was me. And we ended up having a chat because I'd actually been trying to get a hold of Flip anyway. And we caught up a bit. And I didn't really bring things up. But he said, "How about that Don the other day?" And I, you know,
so this is
we had a good chat.
With him.
Yeah, but we had a good chat, and I think he did understand, you know, Don being Don made sense in that moment. And I did not come out and ask and you know, to reconsider, but I just had a really nice, pleasant conversation. He talked about how beautiful my outfits are these days. We had a really nice conversation, and I'm not saying it made me think that there's a chance, but it reminded me that in spite of sort of the awkward tenor of that conversation, there's love there.
But here's the one problem with what's out there, okay? The schedule for spring training, I'm scheduled for just two more broadcasts. And they're both with John Sterling on March 15th and March 22nd. They're not, there's no way they plug you guys into that. That's about me and John. So even if we think he's warming up to it, there's no spot to do it.
And let's face it, you
and
can
also,
say.
And also, I think he's still chapped at Don.
No, I disagree. He might be chapped at me. Let me rephrase that. He might be chapped at me.
Right.
But I think if there's a thawing, it's because of the cogent points I made while thrashing him verbally.
I don't know. Wow. I think it was a reminder that he's very fond of me. And that he knows that you're just doing what you do.
Aren't you trying to make a point?
I don't know if the angle we want to go with here, Don, if we do, if Michael's trying to still work this for us, I don't know if the angle was that you beat him down verbally and he lost.
No. That's not what I said. I said that I made some very cogent points while I was doing that. Not how I did it, but if you sift through all of the anger and the vitriol of what was coming out of my mouth, what I was saying was very, very intelligent stuff on why we would really make for a good team for a handful of innings at least. Tell me, if that game was on, yes, we wouldn't have helped today. We would have saved today.
If you guys were good.
Oh, come on.
Come on. Come on.
I will tell you this. The whole thing is kind of blown up where, like, I'm getting texts during Sunday and Monday's game. Peter and Don should be – relax. Peter and Don should be on the broadcast. This is disgraceful. You guys really have a lot of people that love you.
You're getting texts or tweets? Because I can never
tweets.
Tell.
I'm sorry. No, nobody who has.
Because you're getting texts, that means people that know you thought that, which would be really special.
No. Thank you. Thank you for catching that.
So I saw it too.
Michael K.
And I don't think people should ban spring training games and all that. Listen, it's one person's opinion, but don't judge the Yankees and the Yes Network based on just one way of thinking.
Well, I mean, the absence of the two of you didn't hurt the Sunday ratings, which was the second highest rating in the history of Yes.
It could have.
Oh, you could have been higher?
Yes.
Yeah, could have been the highest rated ever. Could have been.
What egos.
No, it's just because
I have
like
so many baseball stories. I've got so many stories.
Well,
to tell.
You know, I used to come off the bench and pinch run in high school, and one time I bunted.
I will tell you that I have a lot more funny stories than you're giving credit for. I mean, when you play baseball, Michael, you wouldn't understand. You didn't play very long, but when you play baseball at any sort of serious level in high school, bad as I may have been, it's a lot of games. I have a lot of baseball in my background, which is shocking. I know. Don, how many games were you playing a year when you were playing high school baseball?
Oh, because not only did I play high school, but I play in summer league. So I was probably playing 50 games a year.
I played. Do you play fall? I played fall ball.
No.
Fall ball, winter camp, baseball season, summer league. It was endless. It was endless. That's part of my resentment towards baseball now. I already watched so many games sitting on the bench having to wear extremely hot and tight pants.
But that's the tale of your eighth book, right? Hot and tight pants?
Extremely hot and tight pants.
Let's take a brief time out. We've got a lot of things to do. We have to talk about somebody that's very close to Andrew Gundling, who did something that was very troubling. We'll talk about that. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Michael K. Show.
Jambalaya Harden, another triple-double. He returns to Houston. When he was introduced before the game, there were way more boos than there were cheers. But then the Rockets showed a tribute video, and then the crowd cheered. It is, to me, incomprehensible that someone would put together a tribute video on a guy who not more than 2 months ago did everything that you could possibly do wrong to get out of a place of work. That's like your wife that you've been married to for 10 years cheats on you and you get her a Valentine's Day card. Are you out of your mind?
Always the same analogy. It's scary, isn't it, Peter?
He goes back to that well quite a bit.
The Michael K. Show.
Oh my God.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Now, I have known Syracuse head coach Jim Boeheim for more than half my life.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was covering college basketball at the Post in 85, 84 and 85, so I was 23, 24. So, yeah, definitely more than half my life. And he is kind of a gruff exterior, kind of nice guy, if that makes sense. I mean, you really got to get through a lot of the nastiness to get to the nice guy. But the people that do break through, they say great things about him. He's a great friend. He's very loyal. But he's always been, quote unquote, that guy. He's pretty prickly with the media. I think he tries to be funny in a nasty way, and it comes off nasty more than funny. Well, Syracuse has played well of late. They beat North Carolina, although they tried to give that game away. Then they beat Clemson, and Syracuse has a pretty good shot to be in the NCAA tournament. So after beating Clemson, he was asked a question by a reporter, and Jim didn't like it. And here is what Coach Boeheim did.
But if I had played Jesse and Kadari, we'd probably be 22-2 now. I just didn't see that. And I couldn't figure that out by myself after 45 years. I need a reporter to figure that out who's never played basketball and is 5'2".
Go ahead, Anthony, with your question.
Unnecessary. I mean, I know he watches the show in his office. If he wants to call in, he's more than welcome to. That's just not a smart thing to do. Why would you make yourself look like that? Why would you pick on the fact that a guy is 5'2 and never played basketball? So that means he can't have an opinion about basketball? That means that all these people that write reviews on movies and plays, they should have no right to do it because they've never been an actor? That's silly, Jim. Silly. Somebody's height does not preclude them from knowing basketball. You come off looking like a bad guy, which you are not. But you know, you've got this tough, rough exterior where you're prickly with the media. That doesn't serve you well. It doesn't serve Syracuse University well. Makes you look like a bully. Why do it? Jim, why would you do something like that?
It sounds a lot like John Tortorella.
Yeah.
Who just
hates. And we know John's a great guy.
John's a great guy, and I always got along with John because John never really, at least with me and with the majority of the media, never got personal. Like the whole big thing with stop coaching Pat. Pat Leonard of the Daily News, who covers the Giants, covered the Rangers back then. Stop coaching Pat. And that's disparaging, but he didn't, like, attack him the way he looked.
Stop coaching Pat.
You know, or how short he was or whatever. He just hated dealing with the media. Because John, it's probably the same way that Boeheim is. Do I really need to sit here and talk to you guys when you don't know anything about basketball compared to me and you're asking me questions? But that's why they're asking questions, because they don't know and they're trying to find out information. And yes, sometimes it's a pain in the neck, but it's part of your job. And I would think by this time, Boeheim's been at the same place with the same media forever, that he would figure out not to make it personal. So if you want to attack, don't coach. Or I was fine with everything until he started going after his height. Everything else was fine. Like, he was kind of sarcastic about his record would be. Oh, I wouldn't have been able to figure that out. That could be fun, but
I mean, it wasn't fun. It still was mean.
No, it's again, it's still mean. It's a lot of the stuff that Tortorella would do, but don't make it personal. These guys got a job to do. I know you hate, especially during the pandemic and having to be on Cameo, because I do it with the Rangers, Michael. Sometimes you got to repeat questions again. You can't
not
really
Cameo,
hear it.
Zoom, you mean?
The Zoom. Right. What did I say? I'm sorry.
Cameo.
On Zoom. So sometimes it's difficult to hear and all that. It's not. It's awkward. But don't get personal. There's no reason for that.
And I guess you'd let it go if it was just a isolated incident. But Andrew, you went to school there. This is Jim in a nutshell, and I don't think he serves himself well by doing this. I don't know if he could stop. This is the way he is. He's in his 70s, and he's set in his ways. But to comment on a guy's height, but it's not like anybody at Syracuse is going to call him on the carpet. Jim Boeheim is Syracuse. He's been there his whole life. He 45 years, so he played there. So he's not going to be called on the carpet and taken to task, but Jim, why would you do something like it? It makes you look bad, and I'm not just jumping on Jim Boeheim here. I thought Krzyzewski looked bad when he jumped on the kid a couple of weeks ago. Ooh, maybe they're all upset about what's going on in the world. I get it. But control yourself. You're people of authority. You're supposed to be better than that. The guy's 5'2". Who cares?
Also, the tone was – there was zero playfulness to the tone.
No, he's not being playful. He's trying to say, I know more than you. Shut up.
It's weak. I'm so sick of people doing that. And I maintain that was worse than Coach K's.
But
Coach K, you can argue was being sarcastic, but he said, hey, what's your major? Oh, how would you feel if right after a bad test someone said blah, blah, blah? It was a sort of annoying rhetorical way of responding. This was just an attack. This was an ad hominem attack. Like, that just wasn't – I'm not saying he's a bad guy, but woof, it was a bad guy moment.
And I think there is a difference between when you do it on the professional level as opposed to in college, because there are times you are dealing with students, right?
This guy's not a student, though.
No, I get that, but it was with Krzyzewski.
Right.
And I do think that your tone – there probably were people on that Zoom that were students – and you're not going anywhere because, you know, you're never going to get fired. I mean, let's face it, John Tortorella, in the way that he's been, as much as I love the guy, is one of the reasons why he doesn't last long in the places where he coaches. And he's had success because he bounces around. And that's part of the trade professionally. You're dealing with professionals. You're a professional and you could lose your job. Boeheim's not losing his job. So it becomes a little dangerous. Coach K's not going to lose his job. He's not even going to get disciplined for it. He's not even going to get talked to. They're bigger than the schools they coach.
Yep. They make more money than anybody in the schools they coach.
They're making more money than probably a lot of other people in the state they coach. I would bet you Jim Boeheim is probably one of the highest paid people working for the state of New York. Easily.
No, Syracuse is a private school.
Okay. So,
but they're like Nick Saban works for a state school, and he makes more money than any employee of the state of Alabama.
But you've got college students. You're an institution there. You've been there for a long time. So I think it's a little bit different. I think the stakes are a little bit different. So you could be prickly, but you know, you don't have to go after people personally. They're just trying to do their job. And, of course, you know more than they do. But they're trying to get a quote. They're trying to do a story. He just sounds like somebody that just doesn't feel like he has to deal with the media. Sorry, you're bigger than any player that's ever played at Syracuse. You are Syracuse basketball, so you need to represent a little bit differently than maybe a lot of other coaches in a lot of other sports and a lot of other leagues.
Carmelo Anthony just said, wait a second, Don. He said, I'm bigger.
In Syracuse?
Yeah.
No.
Not at Carmelo Syracuse.
Not at Syracuse. Maybe in basketball.
He was there 1 year, won a national championship. Right. He built them an athletic facility.
And
I mean, there have been some, Derek Coleman, they're famous people.
Right.
That came out, Pearl Washington.
None of them bigger
Roosevelt
than Jim
Bowie.
None of them bigger than Jim Boeheim. In Syracuse, at Syracuse, in basketball, yeah. A lot of guys are bigger than Jim Boeheim, and a lot of guys that went to Syracuse are bigger than Jim Boeheim. But on that campus, at that school, he is the guy.
Jim Brown.
I mean, he's bigger in life.
But not at Syracuse.
I'm a little concerned with Peter.
What?
Interesting.
The last couple of days, he said things that he has never said in the last 5 years. Just a moment ago, ad hominem. Never.
But it's a thing.
I know it's a thing. Earlier in the show, he started to quote the seven deadly sins. Never, ever. Yesterday, he was talking about Jesus Christ. Never. What has happened to you?
Well, okay. That's the only thing that should make you worry, is why I said sounded like that.
But ad hominem, seven deadly sins, and Jesus. These are things that don't come out of your mouth very often.
Now Jesus, but not
that's
Jesus.
Come out of his mouth.
Now, two things. First of all, I'm one of the biggest Jesus guys in the biz today. I'm a big Jesus guy. I may not be religious, but I'm a fan of the man.
Okay.
And I actually do bring up Jesus a lot in conversations about wealth and things like that. And I do often bring up pride as a sin with people who are overly obsessed with pride. Michael K. Because it's sitting right there for you. Making decisions based on one of those things that is described as a sin, I think is interesting.
It's more the direction of the show, to be honest with you. I think the show has become way more intellectual than it's ever
Thank
been.
Thank you, Don.
You think it's become more religious?
No, I said intellectual.
Okay, but I mean,
that
he
wasn't
also
religious.
Seems to be steering it toward a theology too. That's
well, to be
I don't know if I'm qualified
to be intellectual. and to be intelligent does not mean to be religious, but it is to be aware of religious theories and philosophies that people use in their lives, no?
I guess, if that's what you want to say. Aaron Boone's doing well. Communicated with him last night. He said he actually felt great. He feels better already. Probably will not return to work for a day or so if everything continues to go as well as they thought. So so far so good with Aaron. And Carlos Mendoza spoke with him last night. And the first thing that Boone said was asked about, you know, the team and how they played. And Mendoza said, no. First, you know, you. And Boone pretty much said to Mendoza what, you know, he had said to me. He feels great, feels better already, and feels better than he has in the last couple of months. So things went well. That's an important thing. Major League Baseball did something that I think is long overdue. They announced that June 2nd is going to be Lou Gehrig Day. So that's going to commemorate the legacy of the Hall of Famer. And will serve as a cause for remembrance, awareness, and celebration of ALS. And there are a lot of people that have fought this insidious disease, and they have petitioned Major League Baseball that this would be a good way to bring awareness to it. And now Major League Baseball, every June 2nd, is going to be Lou Gehrig Day. And I think that's a great thing that baseball is doing. I congratulate them for that. And it's amazing to me that there isn't enough there isn't enough government support for research into ALS and a possible cure. There just isn't. And I've been to a lot of ALS events, and it's heartbreaking what it does to the person, what it does to a family. And, you know, having a Lou Gehrig Day where at the ballpark that day they will talk about the disease and what can be done and you know, possibly fundraising. I think it's a great idea for Major League Baseball, so I thank them for doing that. Just good stuff by Major League Baseball. The Knicks play a game tonight. And Don said something interesting when we were talking before the show. Don, you think that this is a really big game for the Knicks?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, everybody is excited about where this team is right now. Well, you lose tonight to one of the worst teams in the NBA. That'd be two straight losses going into the break. You dip you under 500, which I think is very symbolic for this team because they haven't spent a lot of time at or above 500 really since 2013. Win tonight. Now you climb back above 500, and you're feeling good during the break. So even though it's not a great win because it's coming against a lousy team and you're playing at Madison Square Garden, Michael, I really think a lot of good feelings about this team would be not washed away, but would take a significant hit if they were to lose tonight. You'd limp into the All-Star break. You're not going to play for 3-4 days. You've got a really tough schedule coming out of the break. I think it's a big game tonight. Got to get your wins where you can get them. You're not going to think very well about this team if they find a way to lose to this kind of basketball team after, you know, not blowing a game against the Spurs, but definitely losing a game that I don't think people would have been shocked had you won, considering the Spurs had to go to overtime the night before. So if we really feel that this team can get the sixth seed, guarantee themselves at least a playoff spot, you got to win tonight. No?
No, I think it's an important game just for your state of mind, too, because you don't want to go into the All-Star break under 500. That would take away a lot of the luster, so they go in at 19 and 18, and you know, as we've mentioned over and over again, the schedule after the All-Star break is really tough. So they might lose more than they're going to win. So you need to build up some games over 500. You've got to beat the Pistons. It'll be interesting to see. As soon as we find out, we'll tell you whether or not Derrick Rose is going to play. Derrick Rose received an inconclusive COVID test before the Spurs game. So they had to take him out, and he didn't play. And then every single test after that has been negative. So if he tests negative before the game today, he will, in fact, play. So that will help the Knicks out as well. So we'll have the game on. Coverage will start right after this one at 7 o'clock, 1-800-919-3776. Let's go to Gino in Staten Island. Gino. Gino.
Gino. Hey, guys, can you hear me?
Yeah, now we can.
Wow, I cannot believe I got through.
Really?
I got something for Peter today. Peter, you can relax. It's not a... It's a complaint, but I think you're going to agree with me when I'm done speaking.
Okay.
So we got a DJ from Maryland, hot 97 guy, culture guy. Love you, Peter. You're a good guy.
Thank you.
When I tell my buddies to listen to the Michael K. Show, I mean, it's a tremendous show. Best show on the radio.
I agree.
The entry song, the theme song, is brutal. I mean, it's like when Don's eating the oranges. It's so bad. It makes me cringe. So I'm sitting there.
Listen to it, Gino. Listen to it. Let it wash over you. Gino, let it wash over you. Listen to that music from Joey Salvia.
It's the Don. It's the orange in my mind. I can't. It's cringy. Cringeworthy. So, Peter, you got to do something here. You're a Twitter guy, Hot 97 guy. You can put a collab together. You can put something together.
I'm putting out an entire album. I'm more than just a guy on Twitter. I appreciate what you're saying. But my album is a piece of art.
So why is the theme song what I just heard? You got to kick down the door of the Pinhead suits and really, you're climbing up the charts. You're talking to Flip on the phone about his taxes. You're doing all sorts of things. You got to change the song. It's an easy fix. We're waiting for Cracked Pipe Earl from Yonkers or New Rochelle to put together the theme song. The guy hasn't called in 3 years. We need a theme song. Please, Peter, I'm begging you.
I would like to respond to this. I don't disagree that I believe the theme song could use a freshening up. That being said, when I arrived here, that was the theme song. It has been for a very long time. Michael has shown no indication of wanting to freshen it up. I don't think it's representative fully.
There was a freshening up that has your name and Don's name in there.
Never been played once.
But the Pinhead suit said it's too long. Now, Anthony, do you have the song with the words in it, not just the music? Do you have that?
Yeah.
Because the bottom line is that there is in fact in existence a song by Joey with Don's name and your name, and they felt that it went too long. And for Gino, I mean, I love the fact that Gino listens from the very beginning. It's a 20-second song.
Really? And it honors our heritage.
And it honors Peter. It honors Joey, who's a big part of what we built here. And although this doesn't matter to you, Peter, Don and I started, really, even when we were professionals, listening to sports radio with Mike and Chris, that song was not a work of art, but it's an earworm. It stays in your head forever.
That's all it's meant to do. Come on, one of the greatest sitcoms in the world, Seinfeld. What is that? It's stupid, right?
And Gary Shandling. This is the theme to Gary's show, the opening theme to Gary's show. Gary called me up and asked if I was right. His theme song. Is that like... Mozart?
No, but just because some are not good doesn't mean that that should be the target, is to also have one that's not good.
No, but and it's not about good or bad. It's just the tradition of
unlike
Joey.
Any other.
And it mentions what needs to get mentioned, and you get out. I mean, you almost don't want to have something great because then people might be disappointed when we start talking over it. Just get right to the show. But it symbolizes a lot. That song symbolizes a lot of hard work that we went through in the infancy of this radio station. Peter, you don't know what we went through.
I'm
lucky we're still alive. Never mind being on the air.
Was put on the shelf for 5 years, and I went to the Pinhead suits, and I pled my case that we should have a theme song. And there were a lot of children around the tri-state area that sing this. They started hearing it in their crib. They sing it. They sing it proudly. Anthony, do we have the verbal version? Anthony doesn't. Well, you played it at the beginning of the show, so it has to exist.
You don't want to play it again, do you?
Michael Kay is on the radio today, and he ain't afraid to say what he's thinking. It's Michael Kay Show. Michael Kay is on the radio today. Turn it up, it's time to get on with the show.
On 98.7. ESPN Radio.
But by the way, and just so people know, the part where we were supposed to come in was instead of on 98.7, it went with Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg.
You know what? I'm a big, big supporter of that. Your name should be in that. Blame.
But by the way, all they have to do all you have to do is use our part and take out the on 98.7 ESPN Radio. They already know they're listening to 98.7 ESPN Radio.
There's a common theme. When the song's too long, cut out Don and Peter. When the billboard's too big, cut out Don and Peter. It's
so easy.
It would give you a complex. It really would.
No, Don, if you weren't a stronger person, some would say it would put you in therapy 2-3 days a week. I don't know anyone like that myself.
Oh.
Now, what if Joey himself were to update the song?
He did. They won't play it.
No, I don't just mean to say our names. I mean stylistically an update.
No, I like the song the way it is.
See, that's what we had to get to. So it doesn't matter how.
No, I don't like the song without your names. I like the song the way it is.
But
I like the tune. I like the beat. I can dance to it. It's
you can dance to that.
That's
but,
exactly
but that, that's
what it's
the earworm part's the best. It doesn't even have to be good. It sticks in your head. And that's important because that's the habit we're trying to create on the show.
And
it is that.
People on the Yes Network, they don't even hear that song. We don't play that song at the start of the simulcast,
that's
which
right.
They should. They play a different song.
Why don't
words.
They, by the way?
I don't know. But I would like, can we run it up the poll, Andrew? Do people like the song or not?
Yeah, of course. We can do that.
Steve says, the theme song is awful. Even my young children make fun of it when we're in the car, saying it's worse than the songs that used to be in their cartoons.
Then it's exactly what we want it to be.
You want it to be worse than that?
I want it to be something that you remember either because you think it's bad or because it has a catchy hook.
Liam says, the TMKS theme song needs more than a freshening up. It needs to go.
Adam Rabinholt said, my wife and I love the theme song. I fully plan on teaching it to my three-month-old son. Nasty woman Kathy says, I can still sing the original version with Don as a heck of an anchor. Remember that one, Don?
Yeah, I remember. I was a heck of Don LaGreca.
He's a heck of an anchor.
The show needs a new theme song. The theme right now is boring and needs an upgrade.
But
the entry song is the most horrible part of the show.
You'd want it to be hip hop. I'd want it to be metal.
No, I don't know that I would say hip hop. That runs such a risk of corny. But I think there is a way to. That's why I think the interesting thing to do would be to let Joey get creative and be like, hey, is there a remix you could do that you think could be cool?
Justin Brooks said, leave the intro song alone. It's a staple, in my opinion.
The guy is spot on. The intro in the show is awful. So cringeworthy, it's almost as bad as the Cars for Kids commercial.
And that works.
But I hate that. Everyone hates that. It ruins people's lives.
But you
Vin
know
Falcone
what? If you want to donate your car.
That's right. You know, Cars
gonna,
for Kids.
You're going to know where to go.
Vin Falcone said, the theme song bites. Marty D said, the corniness is part of its charm.
That's it.
You know? I agree with that. I do agree with that. It is part of its charm.
Matt says the theme song should be a remix of one of Don's rants. The Ed Cranepool rant is my pick. Jason Wiseman said, never change it. Been a listener since 04 and will sing it forever.
Nobody thinks Sniff 'Em Dead should be the theme song to the show. It's tremendous.
Rob Green said, I'd rather Sniff 'Em Dead.
What a
Tommy
beautiful
Smokes,
remix.
Tommy Smokes is a dweeb said the theme song is putrid but as catchy as all hell.
That's what we're looking for. We're not looking for a hit.
Not trying to win a Grammy here.
Right.
All right, so, Peter, I've been told by the powers that be, the pinhead suit, so to speak, that for some reason you have muscled in on the Daily Don. You have a list for today.
That's right. I suggested it because I thought the day needed it, and the timeliness of it. Don is going to be, he's going to be just ready to go. Michael, I think, will be dialed in as well. I think Don will be very excited, though.
Now, how respectful was this, Michael?
What's that?
That Andrew actually asked my permission if it was okay if Peter had a top five. And I'm like,
this is your vehicle.
I'm like, but of course. Well, why not? I loved and respected the fact that it felt like I had to be asked.
You're saying, Don, it feels nice to actually get respect to your place of business?
Yes, it was a little off-putting.
A little off-putting, though. Surprising. I get it.
All right, so Jeff Van Gundy is going to join us at 5 o'clock, but Peter has a list coming up. The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Kay, LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you in a great theme song, too, right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hello once again, friends. So everyone gets a crack at the list.
Bang, bang!
Peter, it's your turn.
I'm Hack Rosenberg.
Take it away.
Well, it's been a long time since I've done a list, but I hope I can follow the last one, which guys, if I recall correctly, was my beautifully thought out Christmas song list.
That was tremendous.
Which was received as well as anything I've done on the show ever. I don't know that this will be received as well. I think there'll be some more controversy.
Ooh.
But it's timely, and it needs to be done. Because tomorrow, we can all stream Coming to America.
Oh, yeah.
The sequel of Coming to America. At first, my idea was top five movies starring SNL cast members, but that proved to be impossible and would minimum need 10 to even have a conversation. So I said, you know what? We could do a hell of a top five with top five Eddie Murphy movies of all time. And I want to be clear that Eddie Murphy Raw is not being included.
I was going to ask that.
Okay. In spite of its theatrical release, Raw is not included.
Okay.
Obviously, guys, this is very subjective. I will say this. You can feel my personal influence in one position. The rest of it I really tried to base on general popularity and high regard. But there are things that are going to be left out that you will complain about, I'm sure.
Can I go first on?
Sure.
Nutty Professor.
You know, I thought about the Nutty Professor, and I made it number five. Yes, the 1996 blockbuster starring Eddie Murphy. Of course, it's a remake of the 1963 film of the same name starring Jerry Lewis. It's all a parody of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. This one stars Eddie Murphy as Cletus Klump, Sherman's father. Of course, Sherman Klump, the lead role. Mama Anna Klump, Sherman's mother. Grandma Ida Mae Jensen, yeah, Sherman's grandmother. Ernie Klump Sr., Sherman's brother. And Lance Perkins, a ridiculous parody of Richard Simmons. It co-stars Jada Pinkett as Carla Purdy. It cost $54 million, made $274 million. And, guys, the movie's silly. It has some fart jokes and things of that nature. But I think we would all agree that the dinner scenes where Eddie Murphy's playing everyone are some of the most genius things ever.
Because you get to have the top five movies. There is no movie that has a scene as good as the dinner scene.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
So even though he has better movies, nothing's more classic
it is so good
than the dinner scenes and him playing the grandmother. Right. So that's number five, Michael. Good start.
All right. There's so many to choose from, but for me,
40 of them.
The best movie to me, my number one would be the first Beverly Hills Cop.
You know, I thought about Beverly Hills Cop, and as classic as it is, no Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh,
made
my.
The top.
Oh,
five.
No.
Don, go ahead. Play the role of me. Go.
No, no. We'll just. No, Don's responsible, so he's going to wait because he knows who you're taking out. And maybe he'll say, I would take that out. And there's one where some would say, oh, I would take Beverly Hills Cop over that. But I believe there's a segment of our audience that would also say, no, no, no. Stay with what you stayed with. Leave out Beverly Hills Cop.
I'm willing to be patient, but I'd be taking out what we already have to put in Beverly Hills Cop.
I understand. I understand.
Go on. Go on. I'm going to try to be mature about this.
How about Shrek?
You know, Michael, I thought about Shrek. It was an iconic movie, and Eddie Murphy in the role of Donkey is one of the funniest and most lovable cartoon characters ever in film.
Donkey!
But no. Didn't make it. Nah,
and that's the right choice.
So then Shrek 2's out, too.
Yeah.
that would be correct.
Shrek the Halls, 3. Though, did make it at 4.
Shrek the Halls is number one.
All right, this one, I'll get a little upset. I'm not going to pull a walkout like Michael, but I will be very perturbed if Trading Places doesn't make
that's
the top five.
That's got to be number one.
No, it would be number three, though. Right. Good job, Don LaGreca. Eddie Murphy as Billy Ray Valentine, the street hustler and con man who learns the stock market. It was made in 1983 for $15 million. It made $90 million. Jamie Lee Curtis, Dan Aykroyd, an all-time classic Trading Places.
Mm. Now, is Coming to America on the list, or is that not?
Is that your guess?
I'll say Coming to America.
It would be on the list. It would be number one on the list. Let's go back, shall we?
Sir, I was wondering, did you happen to catch the professional football contest on television last night?
No, I didn't.
Oh, it was most exhilarating. The Giants of New York took on the Packers of Green Bay. And in the end, the Giants triumphed by kicking an oblong ball made of pigskin through a big H. It was a most ripping victory.
Guys, what do you say about Coming to America? It is, in some ways, perfection. The perfect comedy.
Yeah, it has to be number one. It just has to be.
When it's on, you watch it every single time. Special love for that movie. It's already an iconic hit for everyone. If you're a New Yorker, you love it even more for how Queens a movie it is as well. Eddie Murphy plays Prince Akeem. He plays Randy Watson. Speaking of which, let's hear some Randy Watson, shall we?
I believe the children are our future. Thank you. Teach them well and let them lead the way.
He's the lead singer of Sexual Chocolate, and he was also the star of the What's Going Down episode of That's My Mama. Eddie Murphy also plays Saul, the Jewish barbershop customer, as well as Clarence, the owner of the barbershop. And shout out to Arsenio Hall, who's brilliant in it as well.
And now, I don't know if you guys saw the two of them on Kimmel the other day. I think it was Monday. And Eddie Murphy told the story about how he was on Oprah, and Oprah asked him how the Jewish man in the first movie is doing. And is he in the second one? She didn't realize that was Eddie.
To this day.
Yeah.
Wow. Also, Arsenio was on with Howard Stern and said that they weren't sure if the makeup was good. So they were on the, I guess it was the Paramount lot. And the makeup artist said, go out and be these people. So Eddie Murphy, as the old man from the barbershop, went out and actually hit on an older woman on the lot and got her number.
Wait, as which character?
Saul.
The little old Jewish man.
Yeah.
Wow, and still got the woman's number.
And then Arsenio Hall says, to this day, he tells Eddie Murphy, goes, I know what you and her did. You just didn't throw that number away.
If a man wants to be called Muhammad Ali, damn it, it's a free country. I've never seen a non-Jew impersonate a Jew better than Eddie Murphy.
Here's why it's funny, because you're just throwing out the quotes, and I'm laughing as hard as if I've actually seen the movie. Like, that's how classic it is. Great number one. I've got one because I know you, and this would be on my top five. It wouldn't be on anybody else's top five but Peter Rosenberg and Don LaGreca. Boomerang.
Don, it's number two.
All right.
Did you know your pops had a mushroom belt on?
Yes.
But you don't stop there, see?
No,
you gotta keep going.
What you got, mushroom ring?
Yes, good idea. Look what I got.
Doc! Gerard! Did you know on the inside was special mushrooms? Yes!
Eddie Murphy, that's of course David Alan Grier and the late great John Witherspoon, who after a long career as a character actor became a star because of Boomerang.
I love this movie.
Also, it basically, not exactly, but basically gave the world a woman who went on to stardom named Halle Berry. It's a phenomenal movie if you've never seen it, directed by Reginald Hudlin. Produced by Brian Grazer. All these movies, by the way, all the big Eddie movies are co-written by his writing partner, Barry Blaustein. Huge wrestling fan, I should add. July 1st, 1992, cost $42 million, made $131 million. It is truly, in my opinion, like the perfect romantic comedy.
How about 48 Hours to round out the five?
You know, Michael, I thought about 48 Hours, and it's number four.
Yeah.
That's right. Eddie Murphy's foray to the big screen cost just $12 million, made $79 million at the box office. You have, of course, Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte. Eddie Murphy's just a kid at the time when this movie comes out back in 1982, but it's a huge success and sets off the entire thing. So some of the things on the outside looking in, underrated movie that I bet Don also likes. By the way, if you turn the music down a little bit, Anthony, it sounds in my ears like we're literally at a concert. Life with Martin Lawrence, underrated Eddie Murphy vehicle. The Beverly Hills Cops were obviously considered. The underrated political comedy, The Distinguished Gentleman, which is a great movie. Last year's Dolomite, which was tremendous, and Shrek were all considered. But when
can
it's
we get
all
Harlem
said,
Nights with my uncle, please? Can we get that in there?
Harlem Nights was originally on the list, Michael. And the reason I didn't say it is because it was on the main list, so it wasn't on my outside list. And the only reason I took it off, Michael, is because it was absolutely panned. And it is a beloved movie. Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor, Danny Aiello, 1989, fantastic film, just outside looking in. Number five, Nutty Professor. Number four, 48 Hours. Number three, Trading Places. Number two, Boomerang. And the best Eddie Murphy movie of all time, Coming to America.
I love this list. You know what I also like, too, is Golden Child.
The underrated Golden Child as well. Yeah?
Now, there's some controversy about the list.
Interesting.
And when we come back, we'll talk about it because it's damning. Damning, to say the least.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to have Peter's back. I don't even know when I'm going to have Peter's back.
Well, it's not about Peter. We'll collect ourselves. We'll shower off, towel off. It's Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.